My guest at this time is Frank Donatelli. Frank served on three presidential campaigns for Ronald Reagan and later served as Reagan's White House political director. He's also been a deputy chairman for the Republican National Committee and now is with the Washington firm of McGuire Wood. We've asked him to assess the latest very strong showing for Donald Trump, this time in Nevada, and whether his success means he is now steamrolling towards the nomination or whether his rivals still have a good shot at reversing the tide with so many states to go. And Frank, thanks so much for being with us.
Greg, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
After Trump was expected to win in Iowa and did not, a lot of observers concluded, well, maybe his poll numbers are inflated. He's going to underperform those poll numbers in future states. Didn't happen. New Hampshire, South Carolina, and now Nevada are strongly suggesting that this is very real. Tuesday, he got more votes than Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio combined. So are we seeing a tide that could soon engulf the rivals? Or are they right in saying, hey, there's only been four contests out of 50-some to go here, so talk of inevitability is premature?
Well, I guess I would say that the current environment favors Mr. Trump. And the foremost factor advantaging his candidacy is the split field. So it's still five people in the field, five candidates, and even Ben Carson's drawn 7-8%. So that's not insignificant. So I would say as long as the field is split the way it is with so many candidates, Trump with his hardcore supporters will continue to win caucuses and primaries. If one of the candidates is able to maneuver the situation so the field can be whittled down to three or ideally two candidates, then depending on how many delegates remain to be selected, that's the time when that candidate, I think, would have the advantage.
Obviously, it'd be a better chance given the margins we're seeing. But when you see Trump getting 35% in New Hampshire in what I believe was an eight-man race at the time and getting 46% in Nevada in a five-person race, his argument is that when people drop out, some of that ultimately, maybe not a lot of it, but some of it's going to come to him. And if he's now in the 40-ish range with five people in the race, can whoever succeeds in becoming that other candidate really expect to still have a majority?
Well, that's the hope anyway. It is true that his percentages have been good. On the other hand, if you look at his favorable ratings, he does have passionate supporters, but he's got a very, very high negative, even among Republicans, a lot of Republicans saying that they just won't support him. So he does have a pretty high threshold, but I still do think that he has a low ceiling. And I do think he would have difficulty winning a two-man race and maybe, depending on who's still in the race, a three-man race. But for right now, the fact there are five people in the race, one would have to think that he is slated to do well up through which is now Super Tuesday, March 1st, and then if candidates hang in there, maybe through March 15th. But let's remember, after March 15th, the delegate selection rules change. So you go from proportional awarding of delegates to a winner-take-all by congressional district with some state some bonus delegates for state wins being thrown in. And so that's the time that a candidate would have an opportunity to play catch-up if he could get Trump in that kind of a race.
We're talking with Frank Donatelli, who served on three different Reagan campaigns, was Reagan's White House political director. And Frank, since you did serve in a pretty high position on some of these campaigns, what do you think the Cruz and the Rubio folks are looking for as reasonable expectations? The conventional wisdom right now, which of course has been good for absolutely nothing so far in this campaign, is that the Super Tuesday field with all those southern states should be right in the wheelhouse for Ted Cruz. And if he doesn't do extremely well, including his home state of Texas, that could be the handwriting on the wall. And for Marco Rubio, he has to win Florida come March 15th, or else the writing's on the wall for him as well. So how do you expect the expectations to go here, and how do these candidates ever decide when to get out?
Well, the answer to the last part of your question is pretty simple: when they run out of money. Remember, these are candidates that have given years of their life preparing for this time to run. And they also know that this is an historical opportunity for the Republican nominee. I mean, this should be a Republican year, given the fact that they're the out party after 8 years. And so they're going to want to hang in there to the very last minute before they decide to pack it in. But the key determinant will be whether they have enough money to keep going to do the basic things that a campaign needs to do. Obviously move the candidate around, pay the salaries of the staff, and do a modest amount of outreach and building of the grassroots.
Do you believe, and obviously hindsight is 2020 potentially, that Cruz kind of played footsie with Trump too long, and that Rubio perhaps spent too much firepower in recent weeks on Cruz rather than Trump?
Well, I think it's clear that everybody else in the race, including the dearly departed, all thought that Donald Trump was going to implode by his own super normal developments. Remember, Trump's been around before. He ran in for a while. I think he ran in 12. And he may have talked about running in 8, I don't recall, but I do know the last time he put his name out there, he was the leader for about 2 weeks, and then he fell back into the pack, and then I don't know that he even ever announced. So I think the candidates fully expected that to happen, and everybody, including the person talking right now, has been taken aback by his staying power and his ability to survive gaffes that no other candidate could possibly survive. So, yes, the answer to both of your questions. Cruz thought that if he played buddy-buddy with Trump, that when Trump began to descend, then he would pick up that support. Well, he's sort of boxed in on that side now. And not only Rubio, but all the other so-called mainstream candidates spent a lot of time attacking each other because they felt that if they were the last man standing, they could be the one to get Trump one-on-one. And it still hasn't happened. So, you know, those are the strategic calculations you make in a presidential year. Sometimes they work out, sometimes not.
Couple quick questions before we let you go, Frank. One of the things we've seen in the last three states for sure is folks who don't win giving speeches that certainly make it sound like they won. We've seen that from Marco Rubio in Iowa and South Carolina, and to some extent last night, Cruz saying the same thing in Nevada last night, that he's the only one who's beaten Trump, so he's the only one who can. Rubio saying that these last couple second-place finishes, even though they're distant, prove that he's the one who can beat him. What do you make of that type of spinning when the margins are so big?
Well, it's great that politicians can always see the bright side, no matter how they do, right? But, no, I mean, there is an art to this. It's called raising or deflating expectations. You want to artificially set a bar for the press to look at, and then you want to do better than the bar you set. And if you do that, even if you finish third, you can claim victory. You know, that works for a while, but after a while, finishing second or third just doesn't cut it, and you have to begin to show growth. As I say, I think with all these remaining candidates, everybody is looking for that time when someone makes a move to break out of the pack and actually wins a primary. So as you point out, I think Ted Cruz is poised to do that in Texas, his home state, though he's not going to get a majority. So the delegation will be split. And I think for Rubio, with Bush out of the race, I think he's got to run a very strong race in Florida if he's going to continue to pick up the support that he's been getting.
Last question, Frank. You got folks like Cruz and Rubio and other candidates along the way, too, have frequently pointed out that Donald Trump, for many, many years, held liberal positions on a number of key issues. And the response from Trump voters is that they simply don't care. They hate Washington. They don't trust either party. They want someone who is tough and blunt and they believe can get things done. So what do you make of that approach to politics, and how do you counter that?
Well, you know, those of us that have paid some attention to these over the years, we tend to see things ideologically. And this is, the Trump campaign is clearly not a campaign motivated by ideology. It's motivated by attitude and a persona of a candidate that's larger than life. There's been a lot written about public affairs and entertainment coming together, and you see that in the Trump campaign. He does not have a clear set of positions. Indeed, the positions clash sometimes, and sometimes he changes the position from speech to speech, but it doesn't seem to bother his supporters because they're not motivated by his views on specific issues. They're motivated by what they think he stands for and what they see as a larger-than-life persona. So that's hard to attack. How do you attack it? Probably the best way to do it is start beating him. I think a big part of his appeal is that he seems to be inevitable, as some of your questions have been implying. And so the way you handle that is to show that it's not inevitable, and that means you have to start coming closer, winning in these primaries.
Well, Frank, you certainly worked for Governor Reagan, who was considered to be the outsider in 76. Safe to say, slightly different strategies between Governor Reagan and Donald Trump.
Well, I think that's true. I think Reagan was a philosophical or ideological candidate. He had a great persona, but it flowed from his views on the issues. He never had a reality show.
Oh, man. Well, we'll see where it goes from here. I'll be glad to have you back to analyze along the way. Frank, always good to talk to you.
Okay, Greg, thank you very much. Take care.
Frank Donatelli served on three presidential campaigns for Ronald Reagan, later as Reagan's White House political director. He once served as deputy chairman for the Republican National Committee, and he's now at the Washington office of McGuire Wood. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.